to turn this on, John. No, I'm on. Full screen now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me if I step out here? Okay. Found it. Good. Good. First of all, let me say, I think it should be the industry needs you. That's what we're about. You know, obviously, we want you too, but we need you. We need everybody involved. And certainly, I am really pleased to be invited to be here for this conference. I have participated in numerous of the Angus conferences over the years. I was raised on an Angus farm in Ohio. In fact, my father still has Angus cattle back there. He's on a historic herd, and so I know about Angus cattle. I'm involved with three generations of my family right now on a ranch in Kansas, and I'm very proud of that. I'm proud to say, as I go around the country, I'm proud to say I'm an Angus producer. I feel that that's something that is very much a part of me. I know that it's something that I was raised with, and I know that it's something that I will continue to have as an important role in my life. And we're very fortunate as Angus producers, Angus breeders. You know, it gives me an opportunity not only to talk to a lot of friends as I travel around the country, but it also gives me an opportunity to see a lot of good grass, good country, and that's what we're seeing here in Virginia. So I thank you for the invitation to be here, and I'm hopefully will be with you the next couple of days as well to answer questions as we go forward. You know, I'm really proud of my Angus roots. I'm so proud of the fact that my family is able and is privileged to be involved in the Angus business. And we quickly put together some pictures so you would kind of get an idea of my family. And those, he took those from the website. So they are a little bit dated. Those kids, I will tell you, are bigger than that now. And I'm embarrassed as a grandmother that I didn't have a current picture to show y'all. But both daughters and their husbands are involved in the operation. And we work under a marketing and management agreement with both of the operations. We have three different ranches, about 30 miles apart for all of us. The kids tell me that's far enough that they can have the independence, but yet we're close enough that we get together frequently, and I'm privileged to be involved with my family. I know that that's a goal that, as I travel around this country, I find that that's the most common goal that most of us in agriculture want. We want to be able to be involved with our families to give them the opportunity, if you will, to participate in agriculture and what we know is the right way to live with the values, bring them up with the right values. We want to make sure that we survive and that our children and grandchildren have that opportunity as we did. So we are united in that. I want to tell you that the program that you had this morning was outstanding. Dr. Purcell is a leader in talking about the demand index and where our industry has gone. And I want to talk about that just briefly, but I want to talk about an association that we have. I am proud of what this Angus Association has achieved. And when Dr. Purcell talked about what has happened over the last 20 years, you saw a declining trend in beef demand until the year 1998, at which point we began to target and focus on the consumer at that point, and we began to make a difference in that demand curve, and we were able then to begin to respond to what the consumer wanted, and we were able to turn that demand curve. I want to tell you that I full well recognize that the Angus leaders recognized a long time ago that we had to address the consumer. We had to listen to the consumer. And as you look at the certified Angus beef and what that has achieved for us as a breed, that indeed was a response to the taste demands of the consumer. It was a response to the consumer wanting a quality product that tasted good. And even though we at the National Cattlemen's and the industry began to talk about recently about enjoyment for our product, you have been talking about it and producing it since the late 1970s. So certainly if we were to lay the trend for certified Angus beef beside that trend of what the industry was seeing for our generic product, it would be a much different demand curve. So we commend the leaders and the association who brought that about and have continued that at the same high level with the same specifications that it had from the very outset. And it is providing the consumer with that very top quality, consistent product day in and day out. The American Angus Association obviously is a strong affiliate of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. So that makes us linked, if you will. We are not a separate organization, although we deal with things that are different than our breed association deals with. I've been a member of the American Angus Association for a number of years, since I've been in Kansas now 30 years, and so I started putting the herd together 30 years ago, and that's been a while. But let me tell you, we work together. We work together not only as an affiliate, but we work together as the leaders that you send to represent you and your interests on committees and on our board and on our organization. I really am very proud and tremendously respect what Joe Elliott and your leadership is doing and what John Crouch has done for this organization. As I've talked with other breed associations, and I've had the opportunity to do so, they don't have near the excitement, the energy level about their breed. They're envious, if you will, of what our Angus Association has been able to accomplish and the position we hold. And certainly, we in this room know that it has been a hard-fought battle to achieve where we are. But, you know, we had something that they have not. We've had something that is wanted. We've got something to sell. We've got something that not only has been a carcass product, and it's been a high product that's got a lot of palatability, but we also have a breed that's a maternal breed, and we have a breed that is able to produce sires that go out there and cross very well with other breeds as well. So we're in a unique position not only for our product, but for our ability to make it go forward and for our in-marketing program. Other breeds are very envious of that, but your leadership has set the trend for the future. You're talking about not resting on your laurels, but you're talking right now about advancing. And I just want to tell you that the leadership that this industry needs, much of it is assembled right here in this room, and I commend you for sending those leaders. When I talk about the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, I want to tell you that I am very proud of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and you may not hear that everywhere you go, but I want to tell you that the real strength of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is found in its affiliates that are every state cattle's organization, that are the breed associations, and the Federation of State Beef Councils, which is our marketing arm for our organization. The strength of our organization, and it does represent over 230,000 members through those affiliates, I will tell you that the strength of that is because our process is open. You can come as an individual member. You can introduce policy at any committee if you are a member. That committee works on that. It will then be advanced through the committee structure, through the board. Then there will be a membership meeting whereby you will have a chance to vote on that policy. And then finally, there will be a mail-out ballot in order to endorse that policy. So you as an individual member not only can participate through your affiliate, but you may participate as an individual member. And we just changed this, so I believe it gives you much greater ownership and control of your organization. And I commend those of you who are involved in that process. I think it's critical, too, as we look around the country, we hear about the divisiveness of the industry and how do we solve that. I want to tell you that I think it is absolutely critical that we begin with an open, straightforward, and honest process whereby everybody has the opportunity to give input and that they can exercise that right which they are given as a member. Obviously, our positions that we take that go forward are decided by one member, one vote. So if there is a preponderance, if you will, and there's an overwhelming decision to go in a particular direction, that is the position that we represent. It is decided in a very democratic way. But I think it behooves all of us to make sure that that process is open and that diversity, which is healthy, I believe, for the industry, diversity of ideas can be discussed, be on the table, and then we can move forward with the direction that we as an industry need to go based on what our membership wants. Sometimes I hear the argument that, if I belong to my breed association, I don't have to belong to any other industry organization. And I'd like to refute that. I would like to tell you that there are different things that we address as is characteristic, different functions of each of those organizations. And so, yes, indeed, your breed association is critically important that you belong to it. And it is critically important that you belong to your state cattlemen's association because they take care of your interests in the state, those interests that affect you every day. But when you're looking at things like the demand for your product, and you're looking at things like policy positions, two very different things, but you look at policy positions that are going to affect your business and your bottom line, it's critically important that your ideas, your initiative be heard. We do need you, if you will. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is your organization. It does not belong to our staff, which is in Washington or is in Denver or is in Chicago. It belongs to the producers out there in the country. Sometimes I hear the comment, too, that, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is not a producer organization. It doesn't represent my interests. It represents the interests of packers and others in the industry. Well, let me just tell you about our philosophy and our organization. We are over 100 years old, and since the beginning of time, we have represented profitability for producers as determined by those producer members. So if you've got a problem with marketing because of the railroads, which was one of the first things that our organization was organized around, or if you've got some cattle theft in your area that's been a problem, then you can bring that issue before your national organization. Today, if you've got a problem with environmental regulation, if you've got a problem with things like the death tax and how taxes are affecting you and your bottom line, you can bring those issues before our organization. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is about profitability for producers. Our board is comprised of 95% producers. Some have misinterpreted what our board is comprised of. Yes, indeed, we work with packers, we work with retailers, we deal with them around the table as we make decisions, but at the same time, after their input is given, our membership determines what position we take on our policies. That's one thing that I've heard quite frequently is that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association no longer represents producers, and I want you to know they do, very definitely. We are the only national organization working on behalf of producers for any issue, and that is a multitude of issues that affect your bottom line. So if it affects you back home, you've got someone you can go to talk about. When we insist that things that NCBA does, that somebody has to monitor and defend your interests. It's critically important in today's challenging world that somebody do that for you. Certainly you and I are in the business on a day-to-day business of production, and so we don't always have the opportunity to go to Washington or go to our state capitol and lobby our interests. And I would tell you that's usually lobbying with a group of people who are in the state house who maybe don't understand agriculture. And maybe they're being told by some different groups that are putting pressure on them about who's really the original stewards of the land and what's the best thing for you and I to do with the land and how to take care of our cattle. You and I know how to do that. You and I know what's in the best interests of taking care of our cattle. We know how to do it. We know how to manage that land so that we get the greatest return. We cannot allow other outside interests to dominate and dictate what we will do as an industry and as producers. As I said earlier, every policy position that is represented by our staff or leadership is directed and voted on by the membership under a one-member, one-vote process. The process involves deliberation and reason. Certainly, passion is important to be in these issues, and it does surround us on a daily basis. But reason will dictate. Fact and science must guide our direction. And so as our membership deliberates, we make sure that those kinds of discussions have an opportunity to take place. We look at not only what looks like a probable solution for today, but we try to look long-term as to what the future is going to look like and how that will impact us down the road. These are challenging times. Now is not the time for us to sit idly by and for someone else to determine our future. You and I must get involved. We must make sure that somebody is involved for us. We must actively participate to help shape our own destiny. And I heard that this morning, and I think as you as Angus breeders, you've had a history of doing that. We must be involved. We must be able to assure that the future for our children and grandchildren is a future that allows us to be free of restrictive government regulation, and that they, in fact, will have the ability to make decisions, just as you and I do, about our own operations in a free enterprise system that absolutely must take place, free from restrictive government regulation. That's why our board took historic action at our summer conference, and some of you may have heard about that, and so I want to at least mention it. That historic action that was taken was well deliberated throughout the conference, and I will tell you that the decision as it came down was to direct our path to support and endorse George W. Bush in his reelection. Now, we have had some questions about that, but I've had a lot of people who have also looked at the side-by-side comparison of the policies and has told us they were very glad we did this. Because I will tell you that George Bush has worked diligently and unwaveringly to insert reason and science into the debate on environmental policy. That is absolutely critical to the future. We have to have reason and science prevailing in those discussions. He supports the rights of private property owners. His tax stimulus package benefits small businesses and farmers and ranchers. He strongly supports permanent repeal of the death tax. You know, and that's an unfair tax that hits us every day as we pass our ranches and farms on to future generations. We pay taxes every year to the government on property taxes. It certainly is unfair that, and again, they have to be taxed at our death. So we are working hard for permanent repeal of that. President Bush's administration is committed to working with producers and with the livestock and feed industries on efforts to better ensure the health of our cattle herds in the U.S. and to guarantee the safest food supply to consumers all over the world. This president understands how important trade is to our bottom line and our pocketbooks. And today you heard Dr. Purcell talking about the demand and about the value of exports. And certainly I will tell you that there has been much debate in that area. But I will tell you also, we rely on market opportunities outside of the U.S. so that you and I can maintain and grow our businesses here at home. This president has committed to work tirelessly to open up markets for agricultural products all around the world. And as we look at those priorities for the president, current president, and we look at his agenda for the next administration, that's why we took that action. It was not because he was a Republican, and it was not because he might not have been a Democrat. We looked at the issues and the policies and certainly made the decision based in that direction. When Dr. Purcell talked about demand and the impact that that's had on our businesses, it became obvious to me, and probably to you as well, is that demand has been a critical factor in the success of our bottom lines. When the industry went to Dr. Purcell and asked him to work on developing that index for demand, it was that kind of activity from a very respected individual out there in academics who could take the hand and do that. It became obvious that that needed to be raised up. I would contend to you that in 1998, we saw a change and a shift in demand because in 1996 and 1997, we were able, through our committee process, of which many of you in this room participated in, we were able to target demand. We were able to say, how do we impact that? And certainly by targeting, rather than trying to scatter and address every issue, we were able to target demand and demand-building programs. We have seen an increase since that year of 2,200 new products, beef products in the supermarket. That is phenomenal. Your checkoff dollars have gone toward that effort to encourage all of that development and new product development. And yes, as Dr. Purcell pointed out, many packers and processors have put millions of dollars toward these efforts. But you have as well through your checkoff dollars. Your checkoff dollars go toward research, they go toward promotion, they go toward education. And you saw also on the presentation this morning that there have been many research efforts as well with the DNA research and the carcass researches, which you supported. Your checkoff dollars have gone toward those efforts. So I will tell you that there's a people like Fred Johnson, who helped to put that checkoff program in place back in the mid-80s, were very insightful because that is our self-help program. Everybody pays, everybody benefits. You know, that was as true then as it is today. And certainly you've been hearing that our checkoff is under attack from some out there in the industry. But I would tell you that the return that we have been able to document that you have received from those checkoff dollars is just immense, and it's in excess of $5 for every dollar that's been invested. So, you know, by working with different groups and looking at demand and targeting demand, we have been able to make a difference. Before I conclude, I want to talk a little bit about a couple of issues. And one is that some people say, you know, we're in a really good cattle market today. This is really good times, and it is good times. And I will tell you, in our part of the country, a lot of the bulls, the older bulls, have gone to town because the price was so good. So I would contend that those of you who have bulls to sell this year, it's going to be a good year. Those older bulls, people were willing to turn the genetics, so it's going to be a good year. But I can't leave here without at least telling you that it is not due to the fact that the Canadian border is closed. Yes, it has had some impact. Yes, it had initial impact. But the reason we are profitable today and have the levels of profitability we do today, it is not due, as Dr. Purcell pointed out as well, due to the fact that the Canadian border has been closed. As you know, we have normalized trade with Canada to the tune of 65% is what we have resumed of meat, boneless product coming in. So we have quite a bit of product that is coming in. What is not coming in, of course, is the live cattle, the feeder cattle, and live cattle. I will tell you that Cattle Facts, and we have figures from other economists as well, have attributed about $15 a hundredweight to the value of exports. Now, as we've achieved, we've got about a third of that back into Mexico and other places. And I will tell you that there is imminent news regarding Japan. And so I am very excited about the negotiations that we've been involved in. And I think very soon you'll be hearing more about that. And so there's very favorable news on that front. But if we've achieved back a third of the value, you're talking about $5 a hundredweight that we've gotten back, we still are leaving on the table $10 a hundredweight on the price of a Fed steer. That's a tremendous amount when you look at the dollars that brings back to your pocket. If the Canadian border were open today, accurate figures out there estimate $2 to $4 a hundredweight is what we would lose. On the other hand, if we open Japan, and many countries are looking toward Japan, Japan itself is probably due to about $5 a hundredweight we can contribute to Japan. But you add to that Korea and the other countries that are going to follow suit, we're talking about the rest of that $10. Now, if we have to give up the $2 to $3 when we open Canada to receive the $10 by opening the other borders, I think most businessmen would see that that makes sense to do so. And I will tell you that the biggest problem that we've had in the negotiations is people pointing to the fact that we have not done unto Canada as we want others to do unto us, is opening their borders, because we have arbitrarily kept them out, has nothing to do about the safety of the product. Their product is safe. They've gone through the same surveillance and regulation that we have. So the product is safe, and it doesn't have to do with the safety of the product. What it has to do is with politics, and with that border being closed, there's a couple of other things to consider. The Canadians now are talking about finding a place for their feeder cattle. They're talking about opening packing plants in their part of the country up there. Also, what's happening right now, we're talking about losing packing plants in our Northwest because we don't have those feeder cattle coming over. That has dramatic effect, if you will, for us. So, enough about trade, and some of you may want to talk about that later, and I would be very willing to, but I just want to make sure that you understand that the price that we are achieving today does have much to do with demand. It has much to do with supply. It has much to do with where we are in addressing and providing the consumer what they want. We cannot afford to sit idly by. And I would tell you that if we are to have a viable beef industry for the future, I believe that your membership in the American Angus Association, your State Cattlemen's Association, and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is the best investment that you can have. We work tirelessly, I will tell you, in coordinating the effort on the BSE incident, and many of you remember that. And that was an incident that probably could have and maybe should have devastated us, but because we had a plan in place that was put together with the state involvement and with the government and with the state involvement in getting them strong facts, messages out about that disease, we were able to mute that reaction. We were able to bring that back. So the consumer confidence is even higher today than it was on December 23rd when that took place. So I would tell you that there are many of those issues that somebody has to be prepared to address, and certainly I propose that you need to consider, if you're not already a member, that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association will address that for you. We cannot afford to assume that our interests will be protected by bureaucrats in Washington or by well-meaning but uninformed legislators. We must have someone looking out for our interests every day. That is exactly what the National Cattlemen's Beef Association does for you. And I would tell you, as Angus breeders, I know for a fact you and I take risks every single day of the year. And we are not afraid of the future, but I know that you believe, as I do, we must take a hand and we must help define our own future. And with that, I would say I have time for questions if you would like, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you. Are there some questions? Any questions? Mark, you make a good point, and certainly just getting the markets open isn't going to mean that we're able to march back in there at the same level and send the same kind of product that we were before. I would suggest that certified Angus beef product is going to be extremely much in demand over there because it has a very good image with the consumers. But we have a job ahead of us. We have a job in two areas. First of all, we have seen an increase in supply coming from Australia to Japan, but that's not our biggest challenge. Our biggest challenge is we've seen a dramatic increase in pork and chicken substitutes. And so what we've got to do now is go over there and displace other competing proteins. So part of the job, Mark, to answer your question is that we're going to have to put together that plan. And we do have that in the works, you know, to go over there and how we're going to address that because we have a job ahead of us, yes, indeed. Other questions? Well, if not, I thank you all very much. And even though I didn't have many pictures from my ranch, I would like to invite you all to come to Kansas, and I would show that and the cattle to you at any time. So thank you very much.